Should wait to come out, that you should try to gain rank or status before you do that. That's a bunch of bull.
It's a new day in the music industry, and I can reach my fans.
We're getting there.
I've caused harm to the political agenda, and which I'm actually happy for.
I would say probably the best message to them is that they're on the wrong side of history.
Whether you're lesbian, gay, bi, transgender, or whatever, love is love. Shout it out to the world.
The Michelle Meow Show. Your A through Z, covering the LGBT, LMNOP, and everyone in between show. And now here's your host, Michelle Meow.
Hi, this is Sima Lieberman, the inclusionist, with Everyday Conversations for Everyday People on the Michelle Meow Show. This is where we bring people together from different backgrounds to have a comfortable conversation about race, current events, and bring race and current events to the people. Today, I'm excited by the two guests I have today. I have Ray Arata, and I have Rika Alise. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm going to start out by having the two of you introduce yourselves. And since our audience can't see you, can you give us any demographic information about who you are, culture, any of that? So let's get started. Let's get started with you, Rika.
Well, I am Haitian American. I love my mohawk. and I am a little bit of a rebel when it comes to ice cream. But I am the CEO of BeautyLink, a marketplace platform that connects beauty professionals and customers for appointments.
Thank you. Okay, Ray.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ray Arata, and I am the quintessential 6'4" white heterosexual American with an Italian heritage, Native generation, who is the last year of the baby boomers. And I am a emotionally literate man who has been on his path for the last 18 years, teaching men on how to live and lead from their heart, and having brought that into the corporate space about 5 years ago, my company, the Gender Leadership Group, and the conference I founded, the Better Man Conference, focuses on the engagement of men as allies in the advancement of women and target groups. And I love ice cream, too.
And I love ice cream, too. Well, with everything that's even, our topic is everyday conversations on race for everyday people and current events. And the past few weeks, we keep on hearing more and more about gender, sexual harassment. So I want to ask each of you personally, why is a discussion about race and gender, why is it important to both of you? So, Ray, why don't you start?
So, it's very important to me for a whole host of reasons. I have been doing men's work for a very, very long time, and for a long time I was focused on how to help men heal, how to live and lead from their hearts. And 6 years ago, when I started really understanding all the stories I heard from my mother, who was second born in an Italian-American family, where all the rights and privileges went to her older brother, how my wife, who's the oldest in her family, how her youngest brother runs the real estate company, how my daughter, who graduated from Duke with a computer science degree, I had to really look myself in the mirror and say, what kind of man am I if I don't use my power, my privilege, and my position for good? And the last piece is, you know, and once I really more deeply understood this at a gender level, it opened up my heart and my eyes with respect to sexual orientation and race. And so, you know, I have a long history of being the only white guy on a basketball team. So, you know, we all have stories. And so it's just, it's time. And I'm experiencing what I would call a healthy impatience around us as men and allies, not just men, but all allies, that it's time for us to, as I would say recently, stand up and speak up. So that's why it's important to me.
Thank you. And Rika, why is it important to you? Tell us about you.
Well, as a Haitian American woman, I walk the planet with a double whammy. And, you know, and it's been really, really interesting, at least, to be able to share the work that I do with men, women, right, and otherwise. And it's been a constant pull and tug for me every day when it comes to explaining what my business does and also the impact my business has. And, you know, interestingly enough, dodging questions that I think take away from what my business does, like, what is a blowout? What is a blowout versus talking about, you know, what my business can really do, the impact we've had, how fast we've grown. So it's definitely been an interesting thing for me on the everyday. But being an African American woman or Haitian American woman, it's been a really, really interesting journey and experience. Being in the startup world.
Now, Rika, you've been in Black Enterprise. You've been in Forbes. You're the CEO of BeautyLink. You're also the founder, I think, of Boston Naturals. Can you tell us a little bit more about your business and also what was the mitigating factor that made you decide to go into business?
So BeautyLink itself is a marketplace platform that connects beauty professionals and customers and businesses, right, for on-location appointments and gig opportunities. So we've been called pretty much the Uber for beauty. We have a real strong focus on services that take 2 hours or more, and that usually throws us into the category of working with women of color. When it comes down to why I decided to go into business, it was really, really a personal reason. I have a family member who needed services and is disabled. And, you know, started this journey just being able to get her the help that she needed. And now moving into a place where I hear the stories of beauty professionals across the country. You know, we have a network of over 14,000 beauty professionals. And hearing their stories about having the work-life balance, finding work, being able to share what they do with other people, it's just been a really interesting journey for me to look at what I do, not necessarily as, you know, improving the bottom line, but changing the world.
Now, both of you are entrepreneurs, and both of you are very successful. So, Ray, you're a straight white guy, tall, because now we know height makes a difference. And Rika, you're a Haitian American and you're a woman. I'm going to ask each of you, what were the challenges that you've had based on your race and gender? And also, what were the benefits that you've had based on race and gender in terms of your business? And either one of you could just start.
I suppose I could go. I'll start with the benefits, and that's an easy one. That's my privilege, and as in plural, I have the male privilege. I have the economic privilege. I have the white privilege. All of those have made my advancement and my success possible. However, on the flip side, my naivete, my initial slow learning, and then ultimately, ironically, my color has made it very challenging for me to advance in this arena, because as heart-driven as I am, because that's really what, as you get to know me, that's what drives me. I have to earn the title of ally by my friends from various target groups, and anyone who is an ally is only named one by other folks, which is why when I describe myself, I always refer to myself as an ally in training. So it's been both a gender and a race thing for me. And, you know, one of the ways I've countered that is I've developed deep relationships with people I love and care about from various target groups. And, you know, in our house, my wife always says, you know, family is who's around the table, and everyone has a voice, and she's not up for boring conversations and boring dinner parties. So we always have a wonderful mix of people and amazing conversation and connection. So I'll stop there.
So have you ever had, though, people say, hey, man, like, you're a white dude. What the heck do you know about inclusion? What the heck do you know about gender?
And so your question is,
has anybody ever has anybody ever said that? Do you ever hear that? And how do you respond?
So that's never been directly said to me. However, when I held the Better Man Conference in September, we had a corporate panel, and one of the people on stage was the National Diversity Chair for Price Waterhouse. And a Latina woman in the audience asked him, you know, what do you, a white middle-aged man, know about diversity? And there was a big pause, and he smiled, and he said, well, given the fact that I'm an outwardly gay man, I actually know quite a lot. And so it was an amazing time in the conference where everyone learned something that, and so for me, I take that stuff in stride. If it ever gets said to me, I'll smile, I'll pause, I'll take a breath, and I'll come from my heart. And that's what's driving me to begin with.
Thank you. Okay, Rika, what about yours, challenges and benefits of your race, background, gender?
I'd say that I have a lot of great benefits in terms of being able to work within certain ecosystems and understanding of certain populations. So especially when it comes to what I've been doing now, it's a majorly African-American run industry, and I've been able to really connect and build a network pretty fast. When it comes to challenges, I guess it depends on the eye of the beholder, right? I think that for me, a majority of my challenges didn't necessarily come just because of race and gender, but because of social economic standing and access to certain networks. I feel like the startup community within itself is extremely siloed. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to fight in order to get into new networks, and you also have to meet the right people to get into new networks. So I found that a lot of the overall conception of me thinking like, oh, maybe it's because I'm a black woman that I'm not making it. I had to realize the moment that I started being invited to the table that it had a lot to do with social economic standing and my networks as a whole. So I'd say that, you know, a lot of the challenges that I've had have really been pushed based off of the socioeconomic challenges, the startup system really being siloed, and also not thinking big enough and fear, right? I don't necessarily think it all rallied up to just gender and race.
Hey, you know what? I have my own business too, and my radio show is like a startup, and I understand about the fear, and some of the socioeconomic challenges, and I think that's why we need to come together across race, gender, socioeconomic. If we're really allies, we have to be willing to support and help. We have to take a commercial break right now for a couple of minutes. But when we come back, I'll be back with Ray Arata and Rika Alise, and we'll be talking about race, gender, and we're going to be talking about what's the connection between these two businesses.
I'm Heclina. I've been doing drag here in San Francisco for almost 20 years, and over the past couple of months, I just opened up my club, Oasis. It's been going really well. People really seem to appreciate the space. It's something people say San Francisco really needs right now, because the city has been changing a lot. I always had this attitude of opening a space that was kind of like for everybody, and that's just kind of the attitude and the ethics of Oasis, is it's kind of a space for everybody. How does it feel to be a business owner? I don't know, you know, it's funny because I still have to kind of pinch myself to believe it's actually true, you know what I mean? Like I walk in there and I go up to the bar and I go, oh, could I please have a glass of water? You know, it's kind of like, I forget that it's my place. Running gay clubs, it's changed a lot. I think that gay people now, they're everywhere. They don't feel like they have to maybe be in a gay bar all the time, so you have to be much more creative about how you are enticing people to come out to your club. I guess I'm successful because I'll just say it, I work really hard at what I do. I also like to provide a really quality experience for people. So yes, you know, people will pay to see my shows and pay to come to my club, but I always like to give them something that's worth it. The experience that they'll leave my shows going, okay, that was worth it, you know what I mean? This has always been my attitude. Just to entertain people, and so it seems like that works, you know. I would say to young kids, you know, just kind of form your own identity and you know, don't let others dictate how you should behave or think. You can always go to sfoasis.com to find out about all the entertainment and nightlife that we have going on at Oasis. If you want to see drag, we've got that for you. If you want to see some queer hip-hop parties or queer dance parties, we have that for you.
Spotlight on success and achievement, brought to you by Wells Fargo. Together, we'll go far.
And now, back to the Michelle Meow Show.
Hi, this is Sima Lieberman, the inclusionist, back from commercial break. And I'm here with Ray Arata and Rika Alise. And we're talking about race, gender, current events. My question to both of you, because somebody asked me when I told them who was going to be on my show, because one thing I always try to do as the inclusionist is bring together people from different backgrounds, different industries. And I was asked, well, what's the relationship between these two people or what they both stand for? So I'm going to ask the two of you, what do you think the connection is? Because I'm really, my show is really all about making connections.
I think we're both done.
I'm an extrovert, and I can process out loud, which would be a little scary. But, you know, one of the things you mentioned right off the bat is that we are entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And I think to take it one step further is we are, in fact, using our race and our gender for good. So it's using that position, despite our gender and race differences. And what I imagine for both of us is that creates an audience, not just folks from our race and our gender, but folks from other races and other genders. And we end up being potentially positioned as safe ambassadors, if you will, models. So that's my stab at how we might be connected.
And what do you think, Rika?
I think that because both of us are really considering community impact in what we do, there's a close relationship there. Race and gender and using that to our advantage in order to build our businesses is definitely something I can agree to. But I think that there is something to be said about doing things more based off of realization of what's around us as entrepreneurs, and being able to use that to build grassroots impact to build out an even larger business.
Yeah, thank you. I like what both of you said, because I see it as we are doing for the greater good. And what you all are both doing is related to inclusion. Like, I know you talked in the past about you had a sister who's disabled who didn't have access to a lot of the salon services, and you wanted to bring access to her. And Ray, you're working with women, you're working with people of color who haven't had the same kind of access as you've had. And you're trying to increase access. And I think that it's really important to have people from different industries to be able to talk to each other so that we don't just stay siloed in our own industry, because our industry is, all of our industries are about more than just us. And Rika, I just want to say, I know you were talking about fear, but I've been following you ever since we met at Start Out, and I think that you are big. I see you as big and getting bigger. I just had to say that. Ray, you know, you were saying, I was reading something that you said that you work with men who get it. And I know in Rika's business, Rika, you have to have, because we have to have support from everybody. You can't just have support from Black women or women of color who are into your product. You need support from all different kinds of people. So, Ray, what does it mean when you say men who get it? What does that mean?
So I want to give a data correction here, because if I said that, that's not what I meant. I work with men to help them get it, but the truth is, the unfortunate truth, is that there's not a ton of men who get it to the depths that where I would like them to be, where they are, they see the business case, they understand the personal case, they understand what it means to stand up for this and be an advocate, they understand what it means to speak up, and they can be change agents inside their enterprises. So my work is, in fact, with men that want to get it, the few that do get it, and most women and people of color and different sexual orientation who I align with, they get it. And so we somehow need to all come together so that the tide inside corporate America and society can shift. And so that's my response to that. And it's a Herculean effort that I will, you know, I'm not going to finish by the time I'm 6 feet under.
I mean, I know, you know, because I always wonder about specifically, like, what does it mean when we talk about, like, changing how people think in terms of gender? I know when we first met, I think, what did I say? I asked you, I said, well, if you're talking about transforming men, you know, what are you transforming them to? Or, you know, maybe I was being sexist. I don't know. But I live in Berkeley. And sometimes I see some men, not all, but I see some men who say that they think they get it, but what it means is it means kind of like walking around like three steps behind the women and running around apologizing and blaming and all of that. So I know that that's not how you think. So could you say something about that, what that means to you?
Yeah, so if I'm able to support men to understand and own their privilege, number one. Number two, make a commitment to shift their behaviors so that the microaggressions that they may have been completely unconscious to can start to melt away, and they can become more conscious in their actions and support and in the spirit of using their power and privilege, then I feel like I've created a significant impact. When I named my conference the Better Man Conference, I named that for a very deliberate reason, that in that, better man is aspirational. And I've yet to meet a man, once he's had his eyes and heart open to, hey, dude, even though this isn't happening to you, listen to a few stories from different people, from different target groups, and notice how you feel. That's where empathy can begin to be invoked. And when a man says, okay, what do I do? How can I help? Then it's game on. And so that's the kind of shift that I'm looking for. And it's my generation, it's more difficult. But as you start to move down into the millennials and generations that are following them, while they have their own set of issues, they're much more open to what I'm talking about. So maybe does that help answer your question?
Well, could you just tell us what would be an example? Because a lot of times people talk about microaggressions. And some people don't say, what are you talking about? What is an example of a microaggression? In terms of, if we're looking at gender or race, what's an example of a microaggression? So somebody can say,
I'll give you a couple with respect to men with a little bit of humor. And, you know, one is, and you've heard these phrases before, one is mansplaining. And that's when a man feels the need to basically translate what a woman's trying to say. And as I tell men, they don't need you to do that, and yet we do that. I've done it in my own relationship with my wife, and so it's something that I have to watch. Manopolizing. If you ever, as a woman or a person in a target group, if you've been in a meeting and there's men in there, if you let us run, we'll take the microphone and we'll speak over you. We won't think to bring you into the conversation, and we'll basically manopolize the conversation. And then the other one that just, you know, I hate that this happens, my partner Dale calls this one misappropriation, as in a woman could have a great idea, doesn't get acknowledged for it. A man in the room will say something, and they will acknowledge him for the idea. So if you're a woman in any of these instances, the message that's coming at you, you know, is wide-ranging. And if that happens enough, what I make up is that women or people of target groups will speak up less, and they may go to that why bother place. And we don't want that. I don't want that.
So what you're saying then, too, that it really impacts brilliant, it could impact women from sharing their brilliance and their brilliant ideas, they could shut down. Enrico, I want to ask you, because as somebody in the startup world, and we just talked about the fact that the startup world tends to be very male. It tends to be very white, but I'm not saying all white, so don't anybody get the wrong idea. What do you think, in terms of what would you like, what do you think if a man in the startup world, say some guy in startup, say it's a white guy in startup, or what any of the any of these groups, what do you think they need to do? What kind of transformation needs to happen? So that, and the transformation would be so that people feel welcome, because you were talking about some of the access. So what would you like to see in order to give more women, more people of color access? Or have you had any experiences where you felt shut down?
Are you directing this question towards me?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. There haven't been too many situations where I felt that I was shut down.
Good.
Without a warranted reason, right? I think when you first start out in entrepreneurship, you are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. So you think everybody should invite you to the table, and that everybody understands what you're doing. But what I've found is that there is more access happening, and there are more opportunities happening with spaces being developed for entrepreneurs of color and also gender-focused programming. You know, look at Blavity's conference. It's one of the largest black tech conferences in the U.S., and it just celebrated its second year. You have individuals putting together things for women in particular, focused around venture capital, like Capital W. It happens on the East Coast annually. And I think that really what's ending up happening, or the shift that's happening, is really that people are more engaged to finding information and more engaged to being able to participate. You know, I discussed earlier about systems being, you know, communities and systems being siloed, but I think that we're on a route of things slowly but surely changing, with the new idea that we need to report each other when something goes wrong. Sexual harassment, for example, in venture capital is now, I mean, the news happens just every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day you find out someone else did it. And it's really bringing a strong voice and, you know, allowing women to feel more comfortable to share the stories that make them feel that sometimes information is misappropriated and mansplaining, right? It's really been an awesome experience. But I think that, you know, with time moving forward and with things getting more gender fluid, when it's in terms of conversation and opportunity, that we're going to see a lot of different things.
Yeah, I agree. I think so, too. And I think that we are seeing, and I think because of men like you, Ray, and other men of all different colors who are aware and want to be more inclusive, that I think that we're seeing more of an awareness. We're seeing that there are people in the entrepreneurial world, in the business world, in the startup world, who are trying to be intentional and saying, hey, who's not here? And I just spoke at Tech Inclusion, and there was a lot of, and that was all about making people feel included, but also knowing that there's still a lot of people that aren't included. Time to take another commercial break. This is Sima, the Inclusionist. And when I come back, we'll be with Ray Arata and Rika Elise. And what we're going to be talking about when we come back is what's fueling the wave of revelations regarding harassment and assault by powerless people.
The Commonwealth Club of California is the nation's leading public forum engaged with the most important issues of the day. More than 450 times each year, we feature programs on politics, LGBT issues, literature, science, entertainment, and more. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Google Play, watch our videos on YouTube and Facebook, and when you're in the Bay Area, join us in person for our daily programs. Learn more about the club at commonwealthclub.org.
This is a true story about two best friends who fell in love and moved across the country to the city by the bay. After many years of dating, Jen and Jacqueline are now planning their dream wedding. It's a big moment in everyone's life when you say I do, especially when you can make choices for your authentic life and your loved ones too. Congratulations, Jen and Jacqueline. Live your authentic life. A special message brought to you by Weatherford BMW.
Babe, I think we're ready.
We're really doing this.
Yeah, I'm ready for our family.
So where do we start?
Starting a family is a team effort, and when life needs a little encouragement, Pacific Fertility Center will be right by your side as a unified team of the best fertility specialists guided by the highest ethical standards. Pacific Fertility Center provides patients with compassionate fertility care. Visit pacificfertilitycenter.com.
Thanks for listening to the Progressive Voices Network, streaming the best in progressive talk 24/7. Keep the progressive conversation going on by joining our community. Each week, we send out an email that covers important things taking place in the Progressive Voices Network and throughout the progressive world. Be the first to know of upcoming shows, schedule changes, exclusive programming, and more. Simply go to progressivevoices.com and sign up for our mailing list. It's that easy. Progressivevoices.com. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining the Progressive Voices community.
And now, back to the Michelle Meow Show.
Hi, this is Sima, the Inclusionist, back from commercial break with Rika Elise and with Ray Arata. And we're talking about everyday conversations on race for everyday people. And we're talking about race, gender, current events, on entrepreneurship. My question to both of you is, what do you think is fueling the tidal wave of revelations regarding harassment and assault right now by powerful people? We're seeing it in the entrepreneurial community. We're seeing it in the Hollywood. We're seeing it in the business community. What do you think is fueling it right now?
I think there is a level of courage that's definitely being accessed. And also the simple idea that it's really a lot of abuse going on. I know even for myself, it took a long time for me to even talk about some of the issues that I was dealing with. So I'm really excited to see that this time has finally arrived. I'm just wondering what's going to end up happening after.
Yeah. So you two have had experiences with harassment and assault in different ways.
Yes, definitely. I've had it in my traditional sense of what a career was prior to going into being an entrepreneur. And then when becoming an entrepreneur, I dealt with it while raising money.
What happened?
So I got called hot chocolate and had a couple of, physical, it was just a little weird, right? And I didn't put two and two together until later. And I was just like, okay, I have to let this roll off my shoulders because I'm raising capital. I can't, you know what I mean? Yeah. Can't report this. You report it, then you're already, it's a small city, it's a small ecosystem. The moment you do that, it makes it harder for you to find money. People are going to be more scared to talk to you. You know, you just need to learn how to self-soothe. And it was just a lot for me. Didn't expect it. But I'm really excited to see what changes happen and what VCs are going to do, angels going to do, because there are some angels that are also very inappropriate about how this is being done right now.
And I really want to thank you for sharing that and also for addressing the fear. That is real. The power is real. So a lot of times, people will say, a man that I know, who was one of my mentors in business, actually said, well, I don't understand why these women don't come forward. That's just being a victim. That's just continuing the victimization. And what you're saying is what was true for me when I was growing up. It's true as an older person. It's true now for other people. That fear and that power is real because that impacts our daily life. It impacts our ability to make a living, to feed our families, to have a place to live. So thank you so much for talking about that. Ray, what about you?
So what do you think? I have a different take, albeit complimentary. The word that comes up for me is safety. I believe it's more safe now for people to verbalize past victimizations. And I've been asked to comment on President Trump many times. And I'm a Jungian, meaning that I'm a studier of what Carl Jung referred to as shadow beliefs and shadow behaviors. And one of the things that has me refer to Donald Trump as an unlikely spiritual guide is that he is in such shadow that at least it's out in the light. We can see all of his bad behavior. And what I believe is happening is he is giving permission to other people to bring that bad behavior out at a time where all eyes are on this bad behavior. And it speaks to my theory around there's many more better men out there than not better men. And so when you have a combination of courageous women and other target folks that are speaking up because maybe they feel supported, it makes it much easier for the rest of us to not take this BS that's going down. So I think it's an avalanche, and it's great that this is finally happening. So that's my two cents.
Well, I think it's good. I think that it's good that it's happening too. And I'm sure there's a lot that we haven't heard, and there's a lot of people we haven't heard from.
There's more.
You know, I mean, I know growing up, I did a lot of work in the restaurant industry as an hourly employee, and I remember one time in particular, the owner of one of the restaurants I was working in, he assaulted me down in the basement. I mean, I had been drinking, it was when I used to drink, and I had been drinking, so my defenses were down, but I was trying to fight him off. And luckily, at that moment, one of the guys from upstairs came downstairs to get some supplies or something like that. And the guy that was attacking me, the owner, stopped it, but he threatened me. He told me that I would be in deep physical danger if I ever told anybody. So not only did I not tell anybody, I was too afraid to even go back and get my last paycheck. So he even got a week of work for me for free. So I'd like to ask both of you, what do you think, what do you think some of the solutions are to, what do you think some of the solutions are to bring this out even more, and now what? Because the question I have is, now what?
Well, one of the, I often get asked whether I'm speaking to a woman's ERG or a woman who's in some form of leadership, you know, what kind of personal responsibility can she take? And I'm a big believer in gender partnership, and since I'm extolling the virtues of the engagement of men, I always encourage women and folks in target groups to look for somebody from the dominant group and get curious about them, seek to develop a relationship with them so that you can create some partnerships inside your organization so that you don't have to do this alone. So that if something like that was to happen inside your organization, you'd have somebody to go to. Somebody to, you know, one of the things we teach in our work to male allies is to push, promote, and protect. And push is, you know, encourage the person, the woman, to utilize her gifts and move forward and seek the position she wants. Promote is talk about her, you know, speak to your peers. And protect is, you know, stand up and speak up when, you know, BS is going on inside your organization. So it's all possible. So that's what I would say to that.
What do you think, Rika? Because you're the sole owner of, are you the sole owner of your business?
I am the founder and the CEO, and I'm currently in the process of thinking about going to get co-founders. I mean, it's really interesting, right? 3 years in, and I'm starting to think about that. But when I think about what is happening and where we're going, it's kind of weird, right? I think that we're in the phase of having maybe a fourth wave women's movement right now, with all the political tensions and everything that are happening. But the part that I'm somewhat like excited but also apprehensive about is that there are a lot of spaces being created for women specifically,
mm-hmm.
That don't necessarily engage with men, right?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering when we're going to see more safe spaces that are gender inclusive versus this huge shift of like VC firms now focusing on women investments because they know what the status is, right? The statistics are. And they're like, okay, we need to just create this for women. And it's going to be women-only partners. And, you know, what happens to the idea of being able to make sure that we're going at a more gender-fluid strategy where men are included and not necessarily shut out, and where women are included and not shut out? And I think that we're in this space right now where we're going to see a lot of gender-focused groups and initiatives happen, but I don't necessarily know if that's going to be the best solution moving forward. I think that we're going to see some great things happen post the Trump era, right? Maybe I don't want to say like the Trump era per se, but like post that situation going into a, you know what I mean? We're going to really start seeing some changes. And as of right now, what I do see is that because people are fearful, because people don't understand, and because people are still lost in terms of what a solution really looks like, we're seeing ourselves fall into exactly what we didn't want to talk about or what we didn't want to do, which is creating gender-focused environments, gender-focused funds.
Thank you. Well, this is Sima, the inclusionist, and now we have to take another commercial break. And after our break, we'll come back with Ray Arata and with Rika Elise, and we're talking about Everyday Conversations on Race with Everyday People on the Michelle Meow Show. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how do we include everybody across all genders And how do we also include everybody and make sure that it is multicultural?
The Commonwealth Club is a unique organization that brings together people from a variety of backgrounds to explore important issues as a community. Sooner or later, everyone worth hearing comes to our stage. From Marga Gomez to Richard Chamberlain, from James Hormel to Kate Kendall, leading thinkers, activists, politicians, and artists have come to the Commonwealth Club of California. Ted Olson and David Boies came here to discuss their winning legal strategy for same-sex marriage. Jason Collins talked about gay athletes. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence discussed activism and good works. Actor and director Rob Reiner explained how he got Hollywood behind same-sex marriage. Barney Frank described what it's like to be gay at the highest levels of Washington. From healthcare reform to transgender rights, from immigration to gay-owned businesses, it's all at the Commonwealth Club. And that's still just a portion of the 450 programs we present every single year, with new programming nearly every single day. Be a part of the conversation. Learn more at commonwealthclub.org, download our free app in iTunes, and join us in person the next time you're in San Francisco. The Commonwealth Club of California puts you face-to-face with today's thought leaders.
Nonprofits rely on events to raise money, create space for community gathering, and offer opportunities to network. But how many hours in a day do community leaders have when they're busy changing the world? Imagine your next event, gala, festival, or celebration professionally executed with creative ideas and ideals to match your community service. IDK is the community's trusted event production company. Visit idkevents.com for all your event production needs.
And now, back to the Michelle Meow Show.
Hi, this is Sima, the inclusionist again. And I'm in the studio with my two guests, Rika Alise and Ray Arata. We're talking about race, gender, entrepreneurship, and how do we engage across all genders. So my question for the two of you now, since we're talking about how do we engage men, women, gender fluidity, what do we do to make sure that we are engaging across all genders? That's the first question. And then the second piece is, what do we do also to make sure that the conversation is really inclusive? Because so often, sometimes it just stops with white women.
When I think about being more gender inclusive or gender fluidity, I think that there are a lot of opportunities based off of the ability to create those spaces and also to level out the conversations. I know that we have a lot of biases that we're just not aware of that happen every single day, that if we were more engaged and more educated around how to acknowledge and notice that we have having biases ourselves, you know, and trying to figure out what can we do in order to transform that whole entire experience. So I've really been big about telling people, hey, we need to talk more about some of the issues that we have personally based off of our experiences, our socioeconomic standing, you know, why we feel a certain way. I know being first-generation American and Haitian, I have a completely different view on masculinity and femininity, and that's really had a lot to do with how I interact with men and also how I interact with women. So it's been a very interesting process, at least for myself. But I think we do need to talk more and figure out spaces where it could be shared between each other.
Ray?
Yeah, great word I heard you use in there, masculinity. The work I've been involved in over the last 18 years has been all about redefining what healthy masculinity is, because one need not look too far to see how rampant toxic masculinity and unhealthy masculinity, how it often runs the show. And so the one of the ways that I, and to answer your question, the first part of your question, is I have to model reaching across gender, sexual orientation, different target groups, and build relationships with people so that I can then turn to the dominant group called men, where, you know, most of the problems that, you know, we've experienced as a planet, as a community, as a country, as a company, has been at the hands of men. So I personally have to start with the men to take responsibility and accountability for that. And if I'm going to support them in building relationships and being inclusive, I have to do that first. So I have kind of a double responsibility. And then lastly, in terms of the how, I'm a heart-centered man, and I believe that where we are similar, all of us, regardless of gender, age, sexual orientation, race, ethnicity, is that we all have hearts. And when we're able to connect to our hearts and connect with each other and really get to know others, we can then begin to realize that we're better together and that we all want the same thing. And I the thing that I know that all of us want is that we all want to be seen, we all want to be heard, we all want to be valued and respected, and I chunk that up to love. So that's my angle.
What does it mean? What I have to ask you, I'm from the Bronx, so I got to ask you, could you just, like, break it down? What does it mean to connect from the heart?
So one of the easiest ways that I support people in connecting from the heart is I've done a lot of core values work.
Mm-hmm.
And when I invite people to sit down and share what I would call watershed moments in their life where values were present or the absence of values were present, and I teach people how to listen and to come from a place of curiosity, anytime I've debriefed one of those gatherings, the same people always say the same thing. And they say things like, I know this person a lot better. I trust this person. I like this person. I would go to bat for this person. And it's because they made a heart connection. They got past their title. They got past their position. They got past their gender. And they shared. They were vulnerable. They shared a part of themselves. And so when that happens, that's not data, that's not mind stuff, that's human stuff. And that's where I think we as a people really need to start placing more emphasis. I call it the power of the heart. So, you know, I hear that you're from the Bronx, and that's good, but you've got a heart too. And that's where And what I would say is it's a partnership of the head and the heart and how those two can work together.
And I really, and what I hear you saying is that you're really talking about how do people connect. You're talking about
creating connections
between people.
That's right.
And that when people do feel connected, I know in my work, I do a lot of dialogue work. When people start feeling connected, they trust. And when they trust, they can then talk about issues that maybe were uncomfortable before, and they could find some solutions.
That's right. That's right.
So how would we, and Rika, how would we have that? How would we begin that conversation if we were talking about having all genders together and engaging, and that we, together, we wanted to do something to make sure that everybody can be successful and that there is no sexual harassment. So how would we have that? What kind of conversation would that be?
You know, I think that, you know, in order to initiate something like that, we definitely need to talk about training around unconscious biases,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that that's really important. That will give both sides the opportunity to really share how they feel, and also the ability to redefine gender roles and some of the other issues that they're dealing with in terms of how communities are siloed. right? I think that that's a really, really important thing, is being able to re-educate, right? I think it's going to take a while. I don't think it's going to happen right away.
It's a process.
Yes, it's a process. And we're still going to need to engage and figure out what happens with the movement we're moving towards right now, where you have so many different gender-focused groups that are developing right now. You know, you have the Women's March, you have this, you have that, and it's all about looking at, okay, can you support me? If you support me and you're a man that supports women, you need to attend these events, right? Well, the same thing needs to be said to women.
Yeah, and
right? If you support change in the community, then you need to also be able to be in these spaces. And maybe a little bit uncomfortable being by yourself at first, right? I've gone to several dinners where I'm the only woman, right? And I have to think and be like, it's really interesting to be invited to the table. I'm not going to have a pity party right now. It's not appropriate. Right now, we're all here because we're all entrepreneurs. And then move on to think, what's the next piece for me to take on, right? What's the next thing in order for me to invite someone else that looks like me and feels like me, right? So I think that we have a lot of work to do. I wish I could just give you like a straightforward plan, and I think it's going to take a while before we don't see sexual harassment happen, even if it's not just between men and women. We really did talk a lot about heterosexual harassment, but not necessarily digging in deeper, that it happens in other scenarios and that other people are impacted and also go through the same thing.
That's true. That's true. That if we look at what's coming up now, we're hearing about same-sex harassment, and it still comes down to the whole issue of power. Who has power over who? Who's taking advantage of who? And who's more in danger, too, of speaking up? Ray, how would you, if you were gonna start the conversation on a big scale, what would you suggest?
Well, the first thing I'll say is I've started this conversation on a big scale in corporate America, and what I believe where we need to go next is, we as men, the dominant group, we need to recognize that we have a huge responsibility to right the wrong. It may not have been me, it may not have been some of the other men, but the where I think that we're going to get a lot of progress is increasing the emphasis on men's responsibility and participation in changing our behaviors. And I mentioned masculinity before, which is why, you know, I think healthy masculinity is something that needs to be put into our culture such that we not only have male leaders, inclusionary leaders in the corporate space acting from a place of healthy masculinity, but look at the shootings that we've had. Look at our president. It's so pervasive that, to me, I'm a big context guy, that we have to redefine what it means to be a healthy, masculine man in our roles as husbands, fathers, leaders, friends, so that we can make things safe. Everything else that's been said here, I totally agree with, and I'm placing my emphasis on getting more and more and more good men involved so that we can increase the safety. So that's how I would start the conversation. It starts with us.
Women have responsibility, men have responsibility, and it really is about us all working together. Last thing, though. Rika, how could people get in touch with you?
If people would like to get in touch with me, best way to reach me is on Twitter. Under Rika Lise.
Okay, Ray.
Yeah, I would invite everybody to go to www.genderleadershipgroup.com, and that would be the best way.
Well, thank you both so much for being on the show, and I look forward to continuing the conversation. This is Sima Lieberman, The Inclusionist, with Everyday Conversations on Race for Everyday People on The Michelle Meow Show, signing off.